Hello and welcome to Fourth Estate, a show about journalism. We're coming to you from 2SER in Sydney on the Gadigal land of the Eora Nation, right across Australia on the Community Radio Network and direct to your device across the globe via podcast. I'm Monica Attard. Well, the ding-dong defamation case between Christian Porter and the ABC is no more. On Monday, the bombshell was dropped that the defamation action is over. The only problem is that both Porter and the ABC seem to be thinking that they've won. When the full details emerged about the settlement, it appeared that it had something for both sides. Porter got an editor's note added to the original story on ABC Online, and the ABC paid for mediation costs. With that, Porter quickly claimed the moral high ground. The ABC, for its part, did not pay damages, and the original story is, as I said, still online, so it claimed it was a win for its public interest journalism. It's not very often that high-profile defamation cases in Australia end with a win-win outcome, but was it really all that rosy for either party? In this edition, we unpack just what really happened, and is this the end of the matter or just a brief armistice? To discuss this, we have with us Kate McClymont, who's a multi-Walkley award-winning investigative journalist from the Sydney Morning Herald, and Amber Schultz is a young Walkley finalist and now a reporter at Crikey. Kate, I'm going to start with you. You've been through the odd defamation case or two. How do you read the settlement? And was this, in your view, a win for Christian Porter?
Sadly, I have been through far too many defamation cases, more than I'd care to recall. But look, basically, you know, if you're a plaintiff in a defamation case, you want compensation for your badly damaged reputation. You want the story taken offline or an apology, or you want all of these things and you want damages paid. Now, Christian Porter got absolutely none of these. So I just don't know in what universe you could be claiming it as a win.
But he does say, well, he claimed in the doorstop that he did on the day of the announcement, that getting the ABC to admit it couldn't defend to the civil or criminal standard required any claim made in that online piece is, for him, a win. Is that not a win?
Look, I think the ABC was also going to have its problems. But I think that him saying that the ABC, you know, regretted their actions, and rarely have I seen the ABC so out there in terms of putting out statements on this. And they said, absolutely not. What we're saying is we regret if any of our readers or listeners understood us to be making these accusations. And it's interesting that there was no apology or no change to the article online. So I think that that's quite telling.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because it is a kind of battle, even in the aftermath of the decision to abandon the case, that it seems to be a battle that's really being fought in the public domain on social media. Amber, what do you make of this? What do you make of all the tweeting that's been going back and forth?
It's really interesting to see, because I think the ABC generally has a pretty tight rein on what its journalists can and can't tweet. But it seems when it comes to the stars, they can sort of do what they like. I don't know if it's a particularly good look that this has been aired on Twitter and aired, you know, via the journalists and producer rather than through official statements. And I think it will, you know, give the critics a lot to talk about. It is interesting that we've seen it happen online and in real time rather than through any official channels, really. And I wonder if the ABC will be having words to Louise and Sally Neighbour.
So do you think that they've actually lost control of their stars?
I don't think lost control. And I think it's important because, you know, so much of the Christian Porter stuff was aired online. You know, his name, before he outed himself as the person at the center of the allegations, his name was swirling on social media. So it is very much a story that has been, you know, born, bred and ignited via social media. So in some ways it does make sense. And in some ways it also does make sense given that there were, you know, just such stark differences in the narratives from the ABC and Christian Porter, you know, Christian Porter calling it, you know, a back down by the ABC, whereas the ABC saying, Christian Porter initiated the mediation and the settlement. It almost, there is a little bit of cause for this real-time monitoring and this real-time response, but at the same time, it does sort of seem like they've lost a bit of control.
Can I just
jump in there and agree with what Amber is saying? And, you know, the fact that Sally Naber, the EP of Four Corners, you know, published that initial tweet, you know, just I think that from the timeline, the court hadn't even properly entered, you know, the orders that the matter was over. And she had tweeted, breaking now, Christian Porter is dropping his defamation case against the ABC. No money was paid. Now, the Australian later called this Naber's premature triumphalism. And what they seized on was the fact that she said no money was paid when what she meant was no damages had been paid.
And she corrected that. And she did correct that.
Oh, absolutely. But that's something that other media have seized upon. And I find that it's interesting looking at this as an outsider that there's also, you know, an ideological war being waged against the ABC in this case, as well as, you know, against Christian Porter. The battle lines between media organisations, you know, I think are also clear to be seen.
Absolutely. But, I mean, that is clearly the backdrop, Kate. But do you think that the public, you know, the tweeting, the waging of this battle in public is feeding that that ideological warfare going on?
I do. And I think that, you know, with journalists, you have to be very careful that we are there to report the stories, not to publicly campaign against issues. And I can understand that in this case, both Louise Milligan and Sally Naber were very keen to support their journalism and to uphold it, and I understand that. But in the current climate, there's so much negativity, especially in government circles, against the ABC and its journalists and their Twitter accounts. I just think it calls for extreme caution in, you know, what they tweet and what they say.
So I assume by that what you're saying is that they were ill-advised to tweet the way they did.
Look, I think Louise Milligan's saying, you know, we stand by our journalism, I think that was quite fair enough to tweet that, but perhaps it would be better letting other people tweet on your behalf, or just posting the ABC's public, you know, statements. Perhaps just copying those in. It's hard to say because, of course, they had a lot, you know,
a lot
they
on
had
the
a
line
lot in this game as well. And Louise Milligan's, you know, reputation, you know, was on the line here, and certainly, pretty unpleasant things had been raised against her in Christian Porter's case. So it's understandable, but I think you need to be very careful.
Amber, do you think the tweets were kind of close to campaigning?
I mean, I suppose a little bit, but on the flip side, it is interesting. So the Australian ran with the headline saying that the ABC had this expression of regret, which they deny. They say they regret, you know, that people could have interpreted it as Christian Porter being guilty. But it is interesting because, you know, the media ran with something that the ABC is claiming to be false. It almost does require this immediate
response.
Immediate response and immediate rejection, which is exactly what Sally Naber was doing. And the fact that her tweets in a few of the Australian articles, her tweets disputing the Australian's reporting, where she's saying we told them twice that this story was wrong, the fact that they're referencing the tweets rather than referencing, you know, the ABC statement or quoting her directly, reaching out to her directly, I think is quite telling.
Mm. Okay, so let's move on. I mean, how much of Christian Porter's claim that this is, you know, that the pulling out of the action or the end of the action is a back down by the ABC? How much of that do you think is about him planning a triumphant return to the, you know, to the forefront of Australian politics, Kate?
Well, I just think that the spinning by Christian Porter in this has been, I think, kind of embarrassing because, you know, you could hardly say that, you know, that the ABC had now decided not to defend the matter when, in fact, you know, you were responsible to, you know, for, you know, setting in train mediation and then actually I wouldn't say abandoning your claim, but just dropping it. And if you're not getting any damages paid to you, he's going to be left with enormous legal costs. His reputation hasn't been cleared. And he's also facing another potentially worse scenario, which is the other media organisations, including our media organisation Nine and News, are now seeking to have the ABC's defence publicly released. And part of the agreement between the ABC and Christian Porter was that that would be removed from the court records. Now, Justice Jane Jago has been interesting, saying, look, hang on, this is part of the court filings. It's not up to the parties to decide what can be and can't be in the court files.
So Kate, do you think, though, that those files ought to be publicly released?
Look, I think that if they are part of a court case, yes, I think that they should be.
Even a court case that's settled?
Well, they were part of the court case prior to its settlement, and there was a legal argument by Christian Porter's lawyers that they were full of scandalous, you know, vexatious, unfounded. But this is a legal defence that is filed in court and it should be on the public record. So I think that it'll be interesting to see what Justice Jago rules in this case. And you know, it does make you wonder, you know, when you're going back and looking at what reasons Christian Porter might have had in the back of his mind to settle this matter without, you know, basically getting the vindication of his reputation as he wanted. You look at, was it the fact that his barrister, Sue Chrysanthu, was ruled to have a conflict of interest and could not represent him? That happened last week. Was it the thought that, you know, maybe this 37-page defence by the ABC, of which 27 pages have been redacted, was it that? Was it financial pressures? You know, with your lawyer having been removed, you would have to brief a new lawyer, you would have to pay them. And also, does it mean that the delays in the case would mean it would run into a federal election next year? It's all those things that you are wondering, how many of them, you know, was in Christian Porter's mind that drove him to, you know, accepting a settlement or, you know, or to stop the case.
Certainly. I mean, it's so multifaceted, really, isn't it? We could talk about it for hours. But, I mean, back to this issue, though, of the redacted pages in the case. Presumably the reason that Nine and News Corp are in there fighting to have them publicly released is because they'd like very much to publish them in part or in full or in some way use them as part of their reportage. Is that fair? Amber, what do you think?
You know, I think Christian Porter is an elected representative. He's paid a huge amount of money. And, you know, we have had Scott Morrison came out and said that this defamation hearing was the appropriate inquiry to assess the allegations and Christian Porter's suitability to be a minister. And I think in absence of an independent inquiry and an absence of information knowing, you know, what happened, who said what, or what other people have said, you know, I think it's really important that we do have a better understanding, you know, whether it's through that 37-page defence being released or through having an actual inquiry. It is really important that the public knows more about these allegations and more about, you know, Christian Porter's actions, behaviours and suitability.
So Amber, are you saying there, unless the government calls an inquiry, an independent inquiry, that those documents basically, and Christian Porter for that matter, are fair game?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I don't think it's fair that Christian Porter can tell his side of the story and we're not hearing the other one because he's got his lawyers involved and everything has been completely hidden and redacted. I think it's in the public interest and it's absolutely the public's right to know a little bit more about those details.
Kate?
And also, if you bring a defamation action of this kind, you have to expect that the other side will, mount defences. So they were going to be public, and you would have known that when you took on the legal action. So, I mean, I agree with Amber. I think that it does go to what kind of person we did have as our Attorney General. And, you know, in the back of all this, you have to keep in mind that Christian Porter must be seen to, not to have been proven guilty in any shape or form, and no one has, you know, proved any of these allegations. But it's interesting that the ABC, you know, part of the defence was not really saying, look, we are going to prove that he was guilty of sexual assault. We are going to show that there were reasonable grounds for suspecting him of, you know, similar behaviour. So I think if they were the defence being put, as a senior cabinet minister, I think we have a right to know, is this person fit to be holding the office? So I think we should be entitled to see what was there.
I
also question if maybe this was a tactic. You know, we spoke about how multifaceted the motivations for dropping the lawsuit would be, but it also has had, just launching defamation proceedings has had the desired effect, which is, you know, people aren't really talking about the nitty-gritty of the allegations anymore. A lot of outlets have been, I think, quite scared to further report on it or report on, you know, any other allegations that have been aired in the past. And I don't think it's particularly fair that, you know, again, we're getting one side of the story that Christian Porter can launch defamation proceedings, understand that there will be a defence and that all the information that the ABC has to support its defence will be aired, and then, you know, cut it short and say, well, no, actually, I've got what I wanted. People aren't reporting, so let's just keep this hush-hush.
Mm. So do both of you think that the public would agree with you that we have, some right to hear why the ABC thinks there are reasonable grounds for suspicion? Kate, what do you think? Do you think the public will go along with that, or do you think that they might think, you know what, this matter, there is never going to be any chance to prove it one way or another, and it's in the realm of the unfair now?
Look, I think that the public would be split on lines, similar to how it was when the allegations were made. Mm. It's hard to say that there'll be some people who say, you know, enough is enough, you know, let's move on. And other people will say, look, we have a right to know what kind of person we have holding public office and what exactly, you know, were the ABC planning to rely on. So I think it'll be split down the middle.
Mm. Well, Amber, what do you think?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think had this happened maybe 5 years ago before the Me Too movement, we might have seen more of that. But I think now, you know, obviously Christian Porter has a lot of supporters, and he said that when he came back from mental health leave, he was just inundated with people, you know, supporting him and offering him, you know, funding to help him fight his legal case. But I think now we have seen this shift in the public perception of people saying, well, we know that there's this horrible culture in Parliament. We know that rape allegations have gone, you know, covered up or ignored or dismissed, and it's simply not enough to it's not enough to ignore it anymore. We need to know more details, and we need to know what's happening, and we know this culture exists, and we need to hold people to account. And, you know, understanding that they have the presumption of innocence, and that, you know, they deserve a full and fair inquiry, and they deserve that presumption. But still understanding that we need to have accountability, and we need to have information out there.
Mm. And in the absence of the government calling an inquiry, then it falls to media to interrogate that.
Exactly. But having said all that, you do wonder about exactly what is going to be proven one way or another with events that happened, you know, more than 30 years ago when the key complainant is dead. I think they are things that I think are concerning, as in, what are we really going to get? But having said that, I don't know what the ABC has. I think one of the interesting things is in the Sue Chrysanthu case, and this was last week when Joe Dyer, one of the deceased complainant's close friends, mm-hmm. Took action to have Christian Porter's lawyer step aside. The judge ruled in that case that James Hook, a former boyfriend of the woman, Kate, that that affidavit, his evidence would play a part in the ABC's claim. Mm. So I just sort of think, I wonder, did, you know, what exactly is in that? I'd like to know. He's a senior Macquarie executive, and I think the interesting thing here is the quality of the people who have come to the deceased woman Kate's defence. I sort of wonder if they hadn't been so articulate and, you know, so, I suppose, would you call them reliable?
Yeah.
It might not have got this far.
That in itself is quite worrying, though, isn't it, Kate?
Worrying in what way?
Well, in the sense that somebody less articulate, less well-placed in society might have come forward with the same claims and not been taken as seriously.
Oh, look, I think that is a general concern in a lot of these cases. And, you know, I would urge anyone to read Bree Lee's book,
yes.
Eggshell Skull. Like, that is the most well-argued and articulate case of the trouble women have, and especially when they are not university educated or particularly articulate, that juries tend to see he said, she said, and often is the case, the women are the losers in this. So, look, I agree with you, Monica. It's, yeah, that's just, you know, one of the really troubling parts of our society.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's just kind of move that on a little bit, that argument. Are you both comfortable that in the case here, where the person at the heart of the allegations has passed away, meaning, you know, little to no likelihood of a conviction, that the ABC actually had enough to publish in the first place? Amber, what do you think?
I've spoken to James Hook and Joe Dyer, you know, pretty frequently, and I think it's really important to note that this isn't the only allegation of misconduct against Christian Porter. You know, the Four Corners Canberra bubble episode aired other allegations about a relationship with a staffer and inappropriate comments. So it's not so much trying to prove whether something happened or didn't happen some 30-odd years ago, and it's not hinging only on this woman Kate's testimony. I mean, that's impossible. It's looking into a pattern of behaviour and a pattern of conduct over the decades to see if he is a fit and proper person for the role. And my understanding is James Hook, he came out and said publicly, you know, before the defamation proceedings were launched, that he has conversations he would want to share with an inquiry, which implies that this spans decades. It's not one incident. It's you know, a pattern. And I think that's exactly what the public has a right to know. And I think that would be what the ABC's defence potentially would rely on, is that it's not one allegation. It's a series of people talking about similar things.
Mm. Kate, did the ABC have enough to publish in the first place?
No, I don't think that they did. And I say that because obviously in the Canberra bubble, none of this made it in. Mm-hmm. And I think that even though Louise Milligan wrote the story not naming Christian Porter, you know, it was possible that the other, you know, 9 or 10 cabinet ministers could also have sued if there was any suggestion that it was them. Mm. You know, having said that, it you know, Louise Milligan has argued what we were reporting was a very serious letter about a cabinet minister's behaviour has been given to senior people. And that's their argument, that they were quite entitled to say that these allegations have been made. And I think that that is absolutely correct. Maybe it might have been better to get somebody to raise it in Parliament first. For instance, you look at what happened with Michael Johnson, who was the National Party's National Party MP here in New South Wales. So a Labor person raised those allegations, and then the media was able to report on them. Some people might think that that's a cowardly way of doing it, but at least you then have protection against defamation action.
And also presumably that would have prevented the social media sleuths putting their detective hats on, which is precisely what they did. And within 48 hours of the ABC first publishing that story, Christian Porter's name is all over social media and satire websites were in on the act. You know, I guess that raises another issue. Should media organisations actually be liable in those kind of circumstances where they put it out there? Should they be liable for the identification of Christian Porter in this context?
Mm. Oh, look, I don't think so, because I think that the ABC quite carefully reported that story. Mm. They did not, that they chose not to name Christian Porter, and I take it that they chose not to do that because for defamation reasons. But it's one of those things that the courts have to look at now, the realities of social media, especially when injunctions are sought by, you know, various celebrities, etc. You can't control social media. You can't possibly stop, you know, people saying things. For instance, you know, Peter Dutton at the moment is suing a refugee advocate for linking a tweet to a Guardian story and about Peter Dutton and calling him a rape apologist. Yeah. That had 14 likes and 13 retweets, but Peter Dutton is suing over that. And also we've got the spectacle of Joe Dyer threatening to sue Christian Porter for impugning her integrity. I mean, this is all, I mean, never have Sydney defamation lawyers been quite so busy.
No. It's feeling quite Americanized as well. Hey, have either of you ever passed on a story where you believed in the veracity of the story, but you felt that you didn't quite have enough evidence to get there to publish? Amber?
Absolutely, yeah, more than once. And I think it's really tough in Australia because the defamation laws are so strict, some of the strictest in the world. And while I absolutely, you know, in some ways it's a good thing because journalists can't go, you know, harking half-baked truths, we really do have to back everything up. It does serve as a massive deterrent for people coming forward and people being willing to not only go on the record, but if we got sued, to say, yes, I'll stand up in court and say that what I told you was true. It's really tough. And I think in Australia, that's one of the many reasons the Me Too movement didn't take off quite as you know, as quickly or as largely as it did in the US or in other countries, because it's so hard to get stories over the line. It's really, really tough to make sure absolutely everything is backed up. And I think that's why, you know, the Four Corners, the first episode, didn't air these allegations. And that's why the ABC reported, I think, you know, quite, you know, straight down the line when it reported on this letter sent to ministers about Christian Porter. You know, there is such a huge risk.
Mm. Mm. Kate, what do you make of this? Do you think that, in terms of the Me Too movement, I mean, this Porter case was obviously a fairly high profile one. A lot of the other cases, of course, minus Dyson Heydon, have ended poorly for the movement in Australia. Is this the way it's going to be in Australia because of our defamation laws and this kind of deeply blokey culture that we deal with here? Or are you hopeful that we've turned a corner and perhaps there's some real change that we might see in the foreseeable future?
No, I think that the defamation laws in Australia make it really difficult to report on these issues. Mm. Like, number one, you have to have people prepared to go on the record. And even if they aren't prepared to go on the record, every one of these stories you do, you have to say to your sources, okay, if we are sued, would you be prepared to go to court? And if they say, no, I just couldn't do that, it does weigh on your mind. Mm. And, you know, you also find that you're acting like a, almost like a defamation lawyer yourself. Whenever I do a story, one like this, I'm asking, okay, what corroboration do you have? Do you have diary notes? Did you talk to a doctor who might have kept records? Will any of your family and friends give evidence that you discuss these things with them? It's, you know, what you see in the paper is only one-tenth of the work that has gone into doing this story. And like Amber, I have two major similar stories, Me Too stories, that are on hold because we need one more person to go on the record or we need one more piece of evidence. And, you know, people have come to me saying, you know, I was sexually assaulted by a, you know, major, prominent figure. And the thing is, we cannot do that. We just can't because it is often a criminal offence and it's he said, she said. And it's just, you know, that those kind of things are just really too difficult for us to take on. And I have no doubt that the people who come to us, what they're saying is genuine. But because of our defamation laws, we couldn't possibly hope to get a story like that up.
So you're not hopeful, Kate, of getting either of those ones up?
Yes, I am. I always think you just play a long game. No one knows that you've been sitting on a story for 4 years. No one knows about that. So, and look, that was the same with the Dyson Heydon story. You know, like we've been sitting on that for almost 2 years. Mm-hmm. So you just have to be patient.
Okay. Look, on that note, I'll thank you both for coming on to For the State this week. That was a fabulous conversation. I'm very I'm delighted that you both could make the time for us. So thank you, Amber Schultz, and thank you, Kate McClymont.
Thank you, Monica.
And on that note, I'd like to thank Kate McClymont and Amber Schultz for their time and thank you for listening to Fourth Estate. This edition was recorded at the studios of 2SER and heard across the country on Community Radio Network. Fourth Estate is produced with the assistance of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Thanks to the Foundation for their continuing support. Make sure you subscribe to Fourth Estate on your favourite podcast app so that you can hear us talk about media, politics and, of course, everything in between. We'll be back with more next week, but in the meantime, you can stay in touch with us on Twitter. Our handle there is Fourth Estate AU. Thank you to my producer, Anthony Dockrell. My name's Monica Attard, and thank you for listening.